Good morning. Welcome to Life Matters on Radio National. I'm Richard Addy. It's good to be with you. What makes for an exceptional person? I don't mean that in the discounted sense that it's often used now. I mean someone who is genuinely much better at what they do than almost everyone else. Actually, you already know the answer to this, as will become clear later in the show. Root and branch reform, that's what the Prime Minister promised the Henry Report into tax would deliver. We have a fairly complicated tax system, so complicated that almost three quarters of us get our tax done by the professionals rather than attempt it ourselves. As of now, we still have a fairly complicated tax system. There's already been a blizzard of words about the government's response to the report, but only Life Matters can bring you the clarity and economy of the two economists, Oliver Hartwich from the Free Market Centre for Independent Studies and David Hetherington from Per Capita, which describes itself as a progressive think tank. Both of you, welcome again to Life Matters.
Morning, Richard.
Hello, Richard.
The Prime Minister promised a fairer, simpler and stronger tax system as a result of the review. Is it simpler?
No, unfortunately, I don't think it is. Actually, we're just introducing a massive new tax on the resources sector, but that doesn't really do anything to simplify, streamline the system. We are still heavily taxed, and it's a very complicated, very bureaucratic system, and I don't see anything in terms of tax simplification within the current package.
David, do you see how it's... I can't see how it's simpler either, but I'm keen to hear from you.
The only measures I think that you could say are simplifying measures at this stage are the small business concessions around write-offs on capital investment, things like that. But I think that the point to note is that the ideas contained in the Henry Review won't be rolled out tomorrow, they won't be rolled out next year. This is really a long-term reform of the tax system, and it will take multiple parliaments before we get these full suite of measures implemented, and one would hope that at the end of that we do have a simpler tax system. I think certainly Ken Henry's report goes in that direction.
What happened to no tax returns? There was some musing about that in public, that, you know, for most people who are pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, that they might not have to actually fill in a form. That's still possibly on the agenda, I suppose.
It's possibly on the agenda, yes, and I think it's a very good idea. I think it'd be much, much simpler for the vast majority of Australians if you could have your tax deducted, have any shares or interest that you earn managed through a tax file number, and not have to do the paperwork at the end of the year. I think that's a very simple, clear reform, and I very much hope we see that in the near future.
You like that too?
I couldn't agree more. Yes, I think it will be a wonderful idea to make it simpler. Basically, we are currently having hundreds of taxes and levies in this country, but only the biggest 10 of them actually contribute about 90% of the revenue. So I think there is scope for reform.
Okay, before we talk a bit more about what was in the review document and how the government responded, can I just start with you, actually, Oliver? What do you think of the process, the way that this has been handled?
I think the whole process of the Henry Review and the government's response to it was a bit more reminiscent of a banana republic than of a transparent, accountable democracy. The government basically kept the report to itself for 5 months, sat on it, and basically formulated its response to it, and then published both at the same time, 1 week before the budget. I think that's not the way to do it, especially not in an election year. I think it would have been far better to have a proper democratic debate about it, and I think the best place in a democracy to have such a debate about the reform of the tax system is Parliament.
David, I'm sure the government would argue that's exactly the way to do it in an election year.
I'm not sure they would. I agree with Oliver that The better outcome would have been for the report to be published, for us to have had a chance to debate it publicly, and then for the government to put on the table its first suite of reforms. That's all been compressed now, and we're seeing that coming through in an election year. And I suspect with the CPRS scheme and other big policy initiatives, the government would argue that it hasn't had the breathing space at any point to do this, but I think it seems squeezed between a couple of big announcements over the last couple of weeks and then the budget in 10 days' time in a way that doesn't give us great scope for public examination.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the sections a bit. If you count state taxes as well, small businesses are subject to, I think, hundreds of different taxes and imposts. Love that word. I'm going to try and use it in everyday life, actually. There is now some relief for small business coming, though, David.
That's right. The government has said that, well, in addition to a cut in the corporate tax rate, which all businesses will see, small businesses will be able to write off assets as soon as they acquire them effectively, rather than having to depreciate them over time. From a cash flow point of view, that's a pretty good thing. And given that really it's a much hackneyed phrase, but small business is the engine of the economy, that's an important reform.
It is important, isn't it, Oliver? Because we are, as a for a rich economy, we're very dependent on small and medium-sized enterprises in Australia.
Yes, I think, and it is these economy, these small and medium-sized companies that will drive the economy in the future, and it's much welcome to give them some relief and also to lower the corporate tax rate to 28%, although Henry, of course, wanted to go further. He recommended 25%.
Mm, which the government has been careful not to rule out.
Sure.
For most of us, this is going to be about super, about changes to super. What do you think of that?
I think it is right in an aging population to put measures in place that make it possible for Australians to retire and live longer at a reasonable level of prosperity. So I think you will probably have to pay more in your working life into your super fund. Whether the way the government is doing it by putting an extra levy on employers is the right way forward, that's another matter.
Well, I don't think... Oh, yeah, they are putting it on employers. In fact, I think in the review, they didn't argue for that. They argued for boosting our contributions rather than employer contributions.
Exactly, and I think that was one of the ways in which the government deviated from Henry's recommendations. But in general, I think, as I said, in an aging population, it makes sense to really boost the super contributions. But I think it is very doubtful the way the government is doing it, whether employers would actually pay for it.
David, there are boosts to, if you don't have as much super, this is going to affect many women. I think the magic number is $500,000 worth of super. The government will help you.
That's right. I think the super initiatives, along with the resource tax, the best proposals that are in yesterday's document. I think one of the best things about the super initiatives is that they do help people at the low end of the scale, on low incomes, or those over 50 who don't have a big nest egg put away. The last great super tax reform was Peter Costello's $1 million tax-free contribution in 2005-06. And what we saw there was people at the top end of the scale happily clearing $1 million tax-free, but most people unable to access that kind of money. So I think those concessions for low-income earners and over 50s are good ones.
But I think there is a probably even better way to help people on low incomes, and that was another recommendation in the Henry Review of the $25,000 tax-free threshold, basically.
Yep.
That would have helped people on low incomes to actually save more and put it perhaps into their super.
The key issue, though, is the savings point. By directing it straight into super, what you're effectively doing is forcing money into Australia's national savings pool by offering flatter and lower income tax rates. I suspect what you'll do is drive up consumption. We've seen that time and time again, and with inevitable effects.
If you've just joined me on Life Matters today, the two economists are in, David Hetherington from Per Capita and Oliver Hartwich for the Centre for Independent Studies. And we are talking about, the Henry Review and the government's response to it. Apart from the increase in tax on tobacco, which of course was leaked early 10 days ago or so, how much is there in there to try and moderate our behaviour?
Well, there's not much in the government's response, obviously, but there are a few good ideas in the Henry Review itself. And I think, for example, the idea of road user charges makes sense, because currently we solve the problem of a finite resource, roads, by queuing. And that's a measure that's used usually in communist economies, but not in a market-based system. I think
economies in Britain.
Well, sure. But no, basically, I think it is a much better way to deal with roads and make the most of the road capacity by actually paying for what you use.
Right. What about you, David?
Look, I agree with Oliver. I don't think there's nearly enough in the government's response on the behavioural tax side. We need to start putting values on these social costs. The Henry Report has good recommendations on road pricing, as Oliver points out, on the way we tax alcohol, volumetric alcohol taxation.
Just on that, actually, yeah. A colleague of mine was in the wine shop the other day buying a mixed half dozen of wine for consumption over, I'm hoping, several weeks. But anyway, and while she was buying it, she kind of, this idea of the tax came up, and the guy behind the counter said, "Nah, they'll never do that."
I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest. I mean, why not tax alcohol by the quantity of alcohol in the bottle rather than the label on the front of the bottle, whether it's wine, beer, alcopop, whatever you want to call it. The social damage is done by alcohol, not by the label. The other obvious behavioural tax that we'd be looking for is carbon pricing. And as we all know, that's been put on the back burner For a couple of years now.
Oh, more than that.
Because it is a no-brainer doesn't mean that politicians will do it eventually. I mean, we have seen how politicians have reacted, for example, to the Alkopops thing, and that clearly didn't have to do anything with a reasonable, systematic tax reform.
It does look a bit like you can't hit ciggies and cask wine in the same week. There is a touch of that. Now, the resource rent tax, the mining industry has been fiercely objecting to this since it was first hinted at in the face of a protracted mining boom. Is it reasonable to tax strong profits from our mineral resources more heavily?
Absolutely, it's reasonable. The key point here is that these resources are non-renewable. They belong to the Australian Crown, the Australian people, and once they're taken out of the ground, you can't recreate them.
But they're already taxed. The states charge them a tax, don't they?
That's right. Now, here we get into kind of complicated territory. What the federal government is saying is that we will rebate all those state royalty taxes you pay with the money that we collect from you through our super profits tax on resources. Now, what Canberra will need to do is conduct a set of fairly extensive negotiations with the states to try and simplify that structure, because at the moment it looks fairly unwieldy. But the principle is undoubtedly correct. We need to be capturing the dividends of this enormous boom that we're looking at.
Oliver, I think the argument's already been made this could be a precedent, although I understand the resource rent tax is something that's well understood by economists in different parts of the world. But does it send, I suppose, a wider signal to the business community?
I think actually it does. It sends a signal that the federal government is willing to engage in the economy in a very unpredictable way, actually. And also, when you listen to the Prime Minister's remarks this morning, where he talked about that the big miners are, of course, partially foreign-owned, and that there's no harm in taxing foreign-owned companies. Well, I think that sends a message to the world that actually don't come to Australia, don't invest here, because we don't really respect you that much.
I disagree on both counts. I don't think there's anything unpredictable about the way the government has gone about the resource rent tax. It's been discussed in Australian economic and political circles for a long time. It's well understood in other countries and used in places as far apart as Chile and Norway. So I don't think there's anything unpredictable about
it. There's a difference. In Norway, they are putting the revenue from these taxes into a national wealth fund. In Australia, we would probably just collect the tax and spend it straight away.
That's right. Not enough of it is being forced into savings. I do agree with that point. But we should be capturing this cash flow that is ultimately, at one level, ours.
It's a political winner, isn't it, Oliver? I mean, every time the Minerals Council gets on television and says, well, look, we might just take our bat and ball and go somewhere else, they're not going to win many Australian hearts and minds, are they?
That's probably correct. It may work for the government in political terms, but that doesn't mean it would make any sense in economic terms. I really think it really sends the wrong signal that we've got a very interventionist government, which basically takes an enormous socialist point of view on the whole economy.
All right. Now, the report contains 138 recommendations. The government's ruled out 19. Never in 1,000 years, says the Treasurer. That still leaves a bit over 100. What are the missed opportunities, Oliver?
Well, I think, as we already said, the missed opportunity is really tax simplification. There are so many ways that the Australian tax system could be simplified, and that was completely left out. The other one is, I would actually like to see the vertical fiscal imbalance addressed. That means I would like to have secure revenue streams for all levels of government, including local government. I think we should really consider a local income tax as it is practiced in other countries like Switzerland, because that would provide incentives for local government to engage in housing and development and planning.
Right. Okay. That's a radical remaking of how we work at the moment.
But that's what I expected from a root and branch tax review.
David,
I don't like the idea of changing the imbalance anymore, or making it more imbalanced. Arguably, I think in terms of opportunities missed, we've covered most of them. I think you could divert more of this resource rent tax into kind of a locked savings pool. I think there are a whole set of behavioural taxes that are missing. I think certainly you'd want to be doing away with individual tax returns for people with simple tax affairs. But this is not over by a long shot. The point of this was never that we would have one day's worth of reform and then we would all put it in the drawer and be done with it. This will last for 10, 15, 20 years.
That's what the government's saying.
Well, and it's the way these tax reform processes work. By political and economic necessity, you can't change it all at once. Business can't handle that. Markets can't handle that. So these things need to be done incrementally. I do think that the government is being far too risk averse in saying these 19 measures will never occur under our watch. I don't think it's necessary to be that firm on some of the proposals in there.
Okay. Oliver, budget next week. What from the Henry Review do you think is most likely to be announced then? They'll clearly save a few things for that.
That's a very good question, but it's completely speculative. I think we have seen the government's response yesterday, and I think it is quite unlikely that any of the measures that they ruled out immediately would find their way into the budget in some way or other.
Mm. And David, from what you're saying, Ken Henry, who managed to look extremely grumpy yesterday without, of course, saying anything, you think that in 20 years' time or so, that a lot of what he recommended or what the report recommended will actually be there?
I do, because the report is very good. It's economically very sound. It's got a good balance of economics and kind of social justice and social concern. And I think for that reason, governments of both sides over the coming decades will pick up elements of it and roll it out. And I think that will be the test of this in the long run.
All right, gentlemen, that is where we will leave it. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
My guests have been David Hetherington from Per Capita and Oliver Hartwich from the Free Market Centre for Independent Studies. And we've been talking about this, and you'll find links actually on the website to the Henry Tax Review. Love to get your reaction to another lost opportunity at the way we've been summing it up. Get in touch, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Still to come today, boys and their initiation rites, but next, how you too can be a champion.